First, with coronavirus stay-at-home and shelter-in-place orders, there have been fewer cars on the road this spring. While the decrease in traffic reduced pollution in some areas, it's also had some additional unexpected benefits like safe salamander migration. Each spring, Wisconsin's tiny amphibians make the journey to the pond. We're learning what it takes now and how humans can help. Rory Pulaski is a conservation biologist for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. She works with amphibians and reptiles, including salamanders. Rory, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, Rory, tell us about our Wisconsin migratory amphibians and these salamanders in particular.
Yeah, they're really interesting, and a lot of people don't know their life history. So in Wisconsin, we have almost 20 species of amphibians, and amphibians are made up of frogs and salamanders. And a lot of people are pretty familiar with the frogs, at least, you know in the spring, you kind of hear them, in the ponds when they start breeding into the summer. But people don't know quite as much about the salamanders, and they have the, equally interesting life cycle, if not even more interesting. So several of our salamander species, so the tiger salamander, spotted salamander, and blue spotted salamander, spend their winters in the uplands underground, but they all need to make it to their breeding ponds in the spring to breed. And instead of trickling into the ponds over a few weeks or even a few months, they typically all do it on the same night at a certain site. So it's pretty impressive, yeah.
Have you seen this migration in person?
I have, yeah.
And paint a picture for us. I got to hear this.
Yeah. and sometimes, depending on where you're at, it could be more impressive, in some areas than others, but there's a pond, for example, west of Madison, just a little bit, and the salamanders spend the winters in the uplands on one side of the road, and the first spring rain, kind of warmish rain, every spring, the whole population of adults crosses the road one evening to get to the pond. So, on a slow night, you maybe see 10 to 15 salamanders on the road, but on a busy night, you could see literally up to hundreds of salamanders at one time.
Now, the key word here is road. How big a problem is traffic for this big salamander migration?
Yeah, it's a big problem for them. Of course, any of these salamanders we're talking about are not more than 6 inches or so long. And no matter how fast you are, if you're that small, it takes you a little while to get across the road. So any roads around the state or in the country that salamanders have to cross, definitely can be an issue. People, most of these salamanders, actually the three I mentioned, are pretty much black, maybe with colored spots. So they blend in with the road. They're typically crossing at night. Even if you're looking for them, you might not see them. So, there's definitely a huge percentage of salamanders that try to get across the road that don't make it. And that's, they're going to reproduce and make the next class of salamanders. So we lose a lot from a population perspective with roads.
Yeah. Do we put enough of a dent in that population where we're worried about declining numbers because of vehicle traffic?
Yeah, we definitely are. It really is correlated to how busy the particular road is. There's some that they can get safely across, and most of them get across. There's other spots where there maybe are neighborhood groups of individuals, citizens that can safely be out there with, reflective gear and will actually help the salamanders across the road that one night. But if that isn't done or it's a busy enough road, it actually can put a huge dent in the population, if not lead to a significant or even complete decline in the population.
It seems like it'd be hard to prepare for an event like that because you don't know, there's not on the calendar salamander migration night. It's that combination of rain and weather. Is it hard to predict exactly which night it's going to be?
It definitely is. We can kind of look at the weather and, maybe a couple days, 3-4 days ahead of time, we can know when it's coming. But yeah, in terms of really trying to have an organized effort of people to help them cross the road, it's definitely pretty hard to plan for. Yeah.
We're talking to Rory Pulaski, conservation biologist for the state DNR. We're talking about amphibians, especially salamanders, and the way they migrate here in Wisconsin. Now, Rory, we had seen a piece from the New York Times looking at the northeastern U.S. Scientists there trying to figure out if decreased traffic because of, you know, the coronavirus pandemic and the shutdowns related, what kind of impact that would have if salamanders and other amphibians made it across roadways more safely. Is that something you're pondering here in Wisconsin as well?
Yes, we've definitely are curious about it. A lot of times with any of these amphibian studies, we really need baseline data. You know, we want that scientifically to compare to, and we don't have that at a lot of the sites. But in the coming years, and just, you know, anecdotal reports, it definitely will be interesting to look at next year, or even, you know, later in the summer if people are out looking at the ponds to see what the new age class, the juveniles, if there's rebounding populations. So, yeah, it's definitely something we're interested in looking at, and hopefully we'll be benefiting some of our salamanders in Wisconsin.
I've seen in other contexts the idea that amphibians are kind of a barometer, I guess, of the health of an ecosystem. Is that true here in Wisconsin?
Yeah, that's definitely true. They, you know, for several different reasons, they're kind of considered like the canary in the coal mine, and that really is true. Part of that is based on their life cycle, and almost all of our amphibians in Wisconsin spend part of their time on land and part of their time in water, so they're exposed to a variety of different habitats throughout their life. And then even just looking at the individuals themselves, the frogs or the salamanders, their skin is very permeable. Most of them, to some degree, can breathe through their skin. So, you know, if they can take in oxygen and absorb water through their skin, that unfortunately also means that if there's any toxins in the environment, they can take those in as well and probably get impacted by them more quickly than other animals would. So they really do, for several different reasons, seem to kind of be an early warning sign for things.
I'll say I've been out and about over the years in Wisconsin a lot. I've seen a lot of frogs. I can't remember seeing much in the way of salamanders. Is it just bad luck or bad timing on my part, or are they more reclusive and we're less likely to see them?
They're definitely more reclusive, yeah. I even, you know, this is what I do for a living, and even when I go out, I'm excited when I see a salamander. They're not quite as easy to find. And the three species I had mentioned earlier, the tiger salamander, spotted salamander, and blue spotted salamander, they're considered mole salamanders. They're in that family, and given that name because they spend most of their time underground. So the tiger salamander, for example, will come up, you know, in the spring, cross the roads if it has to get to a pond, breed, and then go back into the uplands, and it may stay back underground until the fall. It might come up again a little bit, but they spend most of their time underground. If you're lucky and you're kind of in a wet woods, if you're flipping logs, you may find blue spotted, especially. You could find them maybe throughout the summer, but they're pretty reclusive. They're underground, and that's not for a lack of numbers that you're not seeing them. There's been studies in the northeastern part of the country looking at the biomass of salamanders, the number and mass of all the salamanders in an ecosystem, and they found that salamanders in a lot of sites make up the majority of the biomass. So that's, you know, more biomass of salamanders than mammals and birds and everything else that you would typically imagine. They said, you know, some sites there could be tens, hundreds below you under the ground and you just don't know.
Wow.
It. So yeah, there's definitely a lot of them out there. You just don't see them very often.
I know with some frogs, they are heard but not seen so often. Is there a plaintive call of the salamander? Do they make noises that we can hear?
They do not, no. So that's another thing is that, you know, the frogs kind of lead you to them and you can find out where they are pretty easily. But the salamanders don't make any noise. So, yeah, you don't have that luxury of of getting help locating them.
And we've been talking about one threat to salamanders, roadways, the traffic when they're migrating. Are there other areas of concern that threaten salamanders here in the state?
Roads are definitely a big one for them. You know, there's just, you know, in our modern day society, there's a lot of roads, and unfortunately, it separates a lot of their habitat. General habitat alteration, aside from roads, is an issue for them as well. Our species in Wisconsin like different kind of habitats. So the tiger salamander prefers a little bit more open areas, whereas the blue spotted salamander really likes forested areas. So and small ponds, typically ephemeral ponds in forested areas. So for the blue-spotted salamander specifically, you know, if we have a lot of conversion of wooded areas to open areas or subdivisions, the alteration of habitat is definitely a pretty big factor for the salamanders in Wisconsin as well.
Well, getting back to the road hazard then, I know some places around the world for things like turtles have tried to do things to help them get across roads, I think little tunnels and things like that. Apart from, you were mentioning volunteers in reflectors helping control traffic, are there structural ways that we could make known migration paths safer?
There are. It's, you know, a little bit labor intensive, but there have been successful studies around the world. Europe has done quite a few examples of putting in underpasses under the roads. So that's definitely an option, you know, in areas where there's funding and interest in doing that. And, you know, there's an obvious need for that. We can put fences up on one side of the road. You know, it's obviously a pretty big project. It would typically be when a road project was going in, working with DOT if there's some high crossing areas. And for the public too, what we could really use help with is, you know, any reports, especially of those high migration areas. If we see, you know, we're always interested, like I said, in, you know, even one salamander sometimes, but if we can get reports from people of these high crossing areas, either for salamanders or for frogs, you know, those are similar to what we've done in the past for turtles. We really want to try to get that information and kind of pin down some of those high crossing areas, either to have volunteers be out moving the frogs or to be working with DOT. They've been a great partner with us working on some of these turtle projects and, you know, hopefully trying to get some underpasses in some of these really critical areas.
Briefly, as we wrap up, Rory, if somebody wants to report salamander sightings or wants to volunteer, what's a way to reach out and do that?
Yeah, they can either contact me directly, or we do have a general email address at the DNR. It's DNR Herptiles, H-E-R-P-T-I-L-E-S, at wi.gov. And that's a great place. Otherwise, just Googling DNR salamanders, they'll come to a link where they can email someone as well.
Rory, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Rory Pulaski works for the Wisconsin DNR and was talking with us about salamander migration and how this spring's decreased car traffic may have had an impact to help them get across the road a little more safely this year.